the national department then has to be the decision maker. And the same for statutory bodies, Transnet, Sanral.
The activity is undertaken by a provincial department.
So if the activity that requires authorization.
No, I see what you're saying, but it's difficult to understand it by reading it. That doesn't seem to be what's written there. What's a national proclaimed protected area?
That's in terms of the Protected Areas Act, Chair.
And then you want to add, will take place 150 meters or further as measured seawards from the high water mark. Will that mean you decide on every application that is within 150 meters from the shore?
Chair, if you look at the first portion, the first Roman 1, the 150 meters issue was already falling within that competency. So it's really just the rewording, and we're trying to just elegantly rephrase this section so it's providing clarity to everybody concerned. So that one specifically doesn't change any competencies.
Where is it already?
In 24C2B, Roman 1. It's part of the highlighted portion that is up for deletion. And it's deleted there but reworded separately.
Yeah, but the effect of this will be, until now that was exercised by provinces. Are you now saying that not only are you taking out the ore, you're now saying that all applications within 150 meters from the high water mark of every coast in South Africa will then fall under the national competency? I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. It may be good because we know there's a lot of bad things happening in municipalities. But I mean, is that what it means?
The ICM Act that also has an impact there. And I think this provision links with the ICM Act, if I'm not mistaken, Chair. But I'm a bit more concerned about the point being raised by Mr. Morgan, and I don't think we've fully considered the implications that you raise in terms of the Western Cape, and I think we need to maybe reconsider that a bit more seriously and see what the actual practical implication would be for the Western Cape in particular.
Yeah, but this clause here, if you take out, if you add now this clause F, even if we don't, I mean, that has even got huge implications. Because that's every application along the coast of South Africa within 150 meters from the high water mark, all of that will now fall under national. Those are going to be thousands and tens of thousands. It actually links with what the previous one, because the previous one is that province, that was exercised by provinces. We now want to take it away. So, I mean, it's the same point really that's being made. But his point is just made for the Western Cape, but if that clause is there, if you think about it, it now includes the whole coastline. Mr. Moore?
Yeah.
if it does do it, like we're going to discuss just now, that there where it feels, where national legislation is drafted and it should have the administrative authority and the province shouldn't have. Because remember, I read the scheme of the Constitution. A national legislation like this, you pass it, it is administered by the province. Okay? So what you're doing here now, you're saying, okay, I'm passing this act, but in this act, in these cases, the national minister is actually the competent authority. So really what you're doing in a way is you using section 125 to, even there we have discussed it previously, you're basically using it there to say that in these cases it will not be. Now in some of those cases like international agreements and so on, it shouldn't be, because clearly it's national government which deals with other countries, but there is a reality there, and it may well be, and I'm not saying this, and I don't want anyone to go and report to the minister I've said this, but it may well be that this whole clause needs to be put under the review to look at more carefully, how we create the balances. Because the implications are huge. And as Mr. Abada has quite honestly said, and officials aren't usually honest, so it's specifically heartening for him to say that they haven't really looked at all the implications, even for the Western Cape. But if you take for the whole coastline, then it becomes huge. Okay, what we'll do then is we'll flag this. I'll make a big flag. Department to examine implications further. So what I'm going to do, suggest to committee members, is that we don't then look at that first part of Clause 5. We'll put it all under that. Let the department go and look at the implications further and see before we process that further. But what we can then do is this new clause is being added, although we have said a lot about it already, is the issue of the MSC takes a decision, fails to an application for, and blah, blah, blah. Because that actually, now that I'm reading the thing in context, that actually is, of course, now still extending the meaning of competent authority for national at national level. That's really what this clause does. So the principle is then the same throughout. And this whole clause then is really a clause that one has to understand in terms of section 125 2B, where the Constitution clearly says once you pass legislation that gets performed there. We're now saying, but in this area it's national government which is the competent authority. So you're reversing the Constitution, well, not reversing, but you're using the Constitution, that unless clause, to then do it. So it's actually under the legal principle applies for the whole clause, actually. I didn't think of that previously because I didn't read it in that way previously. Mr. Morgan?
And they are the management authority to determine whether they're in contact with them. Any different management authority.
one must make a difference. You'll have to analyze. You can't say all international agreements, because international agreements do not have necessarily legal domestic binding effect. I mean, look, some agreements, like we read, they say, the one we were looking yesterday, it says, parties will, parties will, parties will. Now, clearly, that's not binding on you. I mean, it's binding in an international moral sense that you'll provide for that. But it only becomes binding once you start passing legislation how to deal with it. Then it becomes binding, okay? So, but the heritage site and the Ramsar one may be slightly different, because out of those agreements doesn't come ye shall, ye shall, ye shall. Actually, it says we are creating these heritage sites, and these are rules that will apply to the heritage site. So the international agreement is self-executing in that sense. It has provisions that apply to heritage sites, or I don't know much about Ramsar sites. I wouldn't extend what I'm saying now to it, but at least to the heritage sites I will. So, you know, there you'll have that clearly that is a national issue to a large extent. But of course, all other laws that we pass in terms of giving management to provinces, that is of course the usual constitutional principles will apply, which I read out this morning. That may become a little bit tricky. The other thing I think you must look at is, don't the heritage site agreement or whatever it is, plus whatever we've done in terms of those agreements, don't they have clauses in there that actually deal with this? That may be another thing we'll have to put into the equation. Because if the heritage site, for example, says that the competent authority to deal with this thing is national, well, we've got another dimension to look at there. Because, you know, the competent authority can be spelled out there in terms of the specific legislation and not in general as we're trying to deal in this legislation. That may be another complication that we have to face and look at the consequences of that and the legalities of that. So it does seem to me there's a huge amount of work that needs to be looked at here, because this looked like a simple amendment, and only a few people commented on it, and the real ones that were worried was the Western Cape, because I think they could see, being as the implementers, this is what we do, so from the day that you pass this bill, we won't do it anymore. So, you know. And of course, then the other issues come arise, then who becomes the appeal authority for those matters, et cetera, et cetera, you know, and so on. And further implications. So it does seem that there are a lot of implications with this in terms of practicalities, and in terms of someone is going to have to properly go and look at the World Heritage Site, the Ramsar Site, what do those agreements say, and that, as I say, I'm not so worried about the general environmental agreements. I don't think much work needs to be done there, because I don't think they create those problems for us, because although they're international, they will not create specific obligations. They'll create general kind of moral, legal, national, international agreements, responsibilities, but not the specifics that we're worried about here. So this does have huge implications. Mr. Moulton. Maybe going to have to look at a some practical examples of where a minister does get applications and on which flow from international agreements, because as I say, nothing is binding in South Africa unless we've passed it through Section 232.2 as we did yesterday in terms of an international agreement. So by even putting a clause like this in this legislation, by saying something that basically flows from international, that really becomes problematic because it's so meaningless. And maybe what we really need to look at is at the specifics. I mean, look at the heritage site, look at the Ramsar and so on, and see if that isn't what we specifically want to look at there, and see what part of it we think must be national, what part of it we think is provincial, or what must be jointly done. And once we've got that, we can maybe have a more meaningful discussion about it, because then we can say, okay, well, we can see why this has to be at one level and why this hasn't. Do all applications within the 150 meters around the coast, do all of them have to go to national? What is it we're trying to, what is the bad thing we're trying to avoid? Well, the bad thing we're trying to avoid is that for municipalities to make cheap money and quick money, they're just allowing building to take place anywhere, anywhere, and so on. So that's what we're trying to avoid. Isn't that the kind of... So it does seem that we may need to be looking at this thing a bit more. And as I said, I am not saying this. I'm just saying we may have to look at this. This may have such huge implications that we may want to refer this host clause to the review process later, so that everyone can look at this thing more carefully and fully look at it before we amend things and so on. But that is just a maybe that I'm flagging. Mr. Abada? When you look at all the issues. Okay. Mr. Morgan?
Mm-hmm.
that maybe, that's before we raised the issue of legality, you said somewhere that maybe we should be looking at more procedures before one goes to the ultimate and just grabbing the power. Where did you write that, on which page? 23. Okay, so now that's that one. I read it just now. I just... Oh, it should not be an application as the potter exists, the part will not have sufficient capacity. Limitations will then be built into the provision. Alternatively, it should be deleted. Limitations for when this may occur should be. Okay, so there you're admitting that well, you can look at the legality now. So once you sort out the legality, it helps us to know how to do it. And then the next issue is, if we do continue with it, then clearly I think what has been said, the one possibility is not to have it at all. The other possibility is then to sequence it more and make it more flexible and more user-friendly by building steps into it. That if someone is not getting within the time frames, then the first thing they can do is ask the minister, you know, for example, to ask the MSC to please say why. The next thing is that if it still doesn't get done in a certain time frame, then to send a directive in terms of what needs to be done. You know, something like that. And then you build steps in, and then at the last measure, you then will kick in the fact that you can take over the power. And then, of course, you must spell out what that will mean. I mean, for example, all the documents has to be then handed over, etc., etc., and that the decision will then be taken and that. And then you may even want to put in steps what the minister can do. The minister can then decide the matter, or the minister can feel that the matter should be decided by the province and refer it back to the province, etc. So you see, it becomes much more nuanced, and especially if this thing gets challenged one day, you don't want to go to court and the court said, but why did you only consider one option, the option of taking away the power from the minister? Why didn't you build in further steps of the thing? Okay, so I think we need to see all that stuff. So you go and work on this, look at the legalities, then look at the different desirabilities, the implications of it, and then the last part, the one where we take over the power, then look at a much more nuanced approach. And obviously start drafting things there for us to discuss and so on. And then, of course, the last option is that if it all is just too complicated for this process now, that maybe we'll then have to refer it back. But I think all this work needs to be done, even if we want to refer it back. We as a committee must feel comfortable that this is not just going to be taken away now because we want to look at it properly and so on. Because the problem is this legislation stands in the meantime. So there can be complications in the meantime that we have. Okay, so we need that work to be properly done before we make a decision on how to move forward. Everyone happy with that approach? Mr. Morgan?
Thank you.
I hope that is part of their looking at it. But for example, if you create a system where there's now more cooperative government that's in consultation rather than trying to get problems out, then that may not have so much in financial implications. We may want to go ahead. So all those things will be taken. But, I mean, all the things that have been said here today, whether it's legal, whether it's desirable, whether it's the capacity to do something, the finances to do it, all that is has to be looked at. Then we'll make a proper decision once we have that information. Do we go ahead with it? To what extent do we go ahead with it? What do we go ahead with? And so on. Plus, or do we actually leave this for a bigger process to be looked at? Okay. So I think all that will be looked at. And so the whole clause stands over until the department can come back to us and give us more information on this. I mean, it'll also give them time to actually engage with Minister and engage with the MNCs, because you'll then be able to look at the kind of things. If we include the whole coastline, will that be another 1,000 applications? If we add the whole Western Cape, that 400, you know, etc. Each other province, you know, how much is that going to be? This other legislation, the heritage side, the agreements there, that also has to be studied. Have we actually dealt with it correctly? Aren't there already competent authorities there and we just need to do something to link it or whatever? Or do we have to create competent? If we do that, do we do this vaguely as this legislation does it? Any international thing which basically means nothing, really, because you don't need... So all those things we need to look at in the basket. Mr. Morgan? To work, eh? Okay. So that clause is basically on ice until we can get further looking at it. Okay. Okay, let's continue. Six, clause six. We note that section 24E does not prescribe requirements for the financial technical capacity to take transfer of rights and obligations. Terms of environmental authority, indeed any requirement for being fit and proper, making it even easier to transfer the rights and obligation and authorization as the effect of the proposed amendment, does not address this fundamental problem. Provisions made for the transfer of rights and obligations are required. What is this about? It's a little amendment to obviously a big clause, 24E. want to add? Just make it more uncertain. I mean, you shouldn't I mean, it's obvious. You're dealing with what will be in a environmental authorization. You don't have to put if required. I think they're right. You must take out that amendment. It's not amendment. Take out those words. I mean, otherwise you have to, after every section, put if required, if required, if required. It will make it meaningless. Okay, so that amendment we agree with. They must take that out. In our, anyone want to say something about that? No? Okay. In our view, section 24F3, which provides an offence to a charge of having committed a... What clause are we... Oh, no, that's the next clause. Okay, is there anyone under clause 6 who wants to add anything? I think we're all just basically saying it's fine as an amendment. No problem. All right, clause 7. Explain to us what clause 7 is all about. It's just an addition of one sub-clause in section 24F. What are we adding?
Any non-compliance with the norm and standards developed in terms of this act, specifically section 24.10, it makes it an offence, a section 24F offence.
It's an offence for any person to fail to comply with or to contravene any applicable normal standard developed in terms of section 24.10. Okay. Ms. Dawood, your document hasn't got this amendment in it, eh? So go through that document again and make sure all the amendments are there. This is one is not there. I see it's on page, well, you don't have page numbers. But if you look at this here, you've got... You've changed some words up front there with the Minister Responsible Minerals Affairs, but you haven't put in this F, okay? It's an offence to not comply with a norm and standard. Is that clear enough? Offences have to be clear.
Criminalizing 24.10.
understand it. You see, what my problem is, not I'm not worried so much that there are some where you actually, where the minister is not really a Norman standard. It's where the minister says you can do this, but you must comply with this, and if you don't, then that's it. But my worry is whether it's clear enough that if you just set general norms and standards, you know, when you put in a drain pipe, it must be 15 millimeters wide. So, you know, you put any drain pipe anywhere in a heritage site, the drain pipes must be this. Now, those are norms and standards that you set of the kind of equipment. Now, I'm worried if we're going to criminalize that, it's just going to be completely unclear what you criminalize. So I think what you must go and do there for me is go and look at more clearly which specific norms and standards is where a minister, for example, it's not really a norm and standard, it's a condition more. Then I can understand if we criminalize that. But to criminalize all norms and standards, some of them are just going to be wide things, just saying you don't comply with it, to make that a crime, I think it's going to be too wide.
Chair, I'm just looking at the section 2410A, Roman figure 1, which limits it to, I think, what we are looking
for.
In terms of.
So that's why I'm saying, go and look at that one and see if there are any other ones in 2410 that you feel should be there. So we can maybe put one or two of them and refer to them specifically, okay? Maybe limit this to specific examples, i.e. 2410A1. Okay, so you guys will just look at that. In principle, it's fine. We just want to make it a bit narrower and see that it's we know what we criminalize. Okay, then so 7. Are there any other things on the 7? Help me here. I mean, I'm trying to just check. This is now 24F3 and 24G4. Comments under section 7, yeah, that's relevant. I'm just trying to find out where section 8, clause 8 begins. Clause 8, now this is all comments on clause 7. Is this right? Some of them refer to 24F3, some of them refer to 24G4. What link? to defend the charge to show that the activity was commenced continued as an emergency. Okay. So that to protect the line. Person convicted of an offense in terms of liable fine not exceeding $5 million. All right, looks like we'll have to go through this lot. Let's see. Provide the defense to a charge of having committed an offense if it's shown that the activity was an emergency. Should include an element of proportionality so that the circumstances constitute an emergency are in fact sufficiently serious. That's kind of important.
Just to give, I think, some context to this, I think the person is basically wanting to put qualifications of that defense clause to make sure that it's only real and genuine instances of an emergency situation, because the clause as it stands doesn't have any provisos. But I think just an important thing to note is that in terms of the common law defense of necessity, which is open to anybody who is under sort of criminal investigation, it's a very similar kind of defense. I might be wrong, but I think the requirements are for the common law of necessity defense is there must be a legal interest. It must be under threat. The steps you take in defense of it must be necessary and immediate, and it can't be the fault of the person relying on of that defense.
The problem is that's the common law offense. You're now creating a statutory offense, and the common law principle won't necessarily apply to it, because that's only to the common law defense of necessity.
Chair, I could be very wrong, and maybe if there's some other lawyers, is that I think that the common law defenses apply to both statutory and common law offenses.
That's why it's a common law offense. Unless it's specifically made applicable to it. But what's wrong with the suggestion of this? Says you add the words provided that the activity commenced or continued is proportional to the risk to human life, property, or the environment that the activity sought to limit or avoid, and that the emergency was not caused by the person that wishes to rely on it. What's wrong with putting that in?
It's no issues. I support that idea.
Yeah, because it's a much clearer. I think it's included. I mean, emergencies, just as a general principle, you accept life, limb, property, health, environment. I mean, those are the things that are usually acceptable. So, I mean, to limit it and say, if someone's life is going to be taken, then you can have an emergency, but if the whole house is going to blow away, well, if the whole suburb is going to wash away, then it's not an emergency. That would be a bit drastic to say, if you hurt property, but you don't hurt. So I think let's not worry. I mean, the issue for me now is not so much what we include property or don't include. For me, it's really the confusion of having three types of emergencies we're now drafting. But we're going to get to that discussion. So I think we will accept that as well. For now, I mean, as I say. So what is this long story you've written here?
What do members say? Is it enough for these bad people to only
Remember, this is not what they will get. This is the upper limit. So it just means you can't go beyond this. Can go, you know, can decide I'm only going to make it one year or whatever. It's just the magistrate, for example, has a limit in terms of their jurisdiction. I think it's now 15 years, 10 years, something like that. So if you don't put it in the legislation, then clearly they won't be able to go beyond their maximum. So that's really what it does. It helps push that along a bit. Sorry. And obviously one would want to make it equivalent to whatever 5 million is, the years. But let's hear. Anyone say we need more than this or this?
Be 2020.
We have changed this in 2009.
Yeah, much.
money is devalued so badly. You know. The rand's worth nothing since then. Okay. These people are really soft on crime. Alright, so the ANC is being voted down here. We want to be tough on crime. We want to be tough. We want to be tough on crime, but we voted for 2020. The opposition went for 10-10. No, I think let's do a 10-10. I think it's in any case. Otherwise, tomorrow you're going to get a stupid article in the newspaper. Entries vote for 20 million rand just for an ordinary non-authorization. Are these people crazy? Did they go to school or what? Have they got education?
One year
for rape. That'll be the case. Yeah. No. So this committee is very balanced. So between the department's low 5 million, the chair's high 20 million, we've fitted nicely, compromised in the middle, 10-10. And then, of course, in subsequent crimes, you must make it, don't be scared, put it in subsequent crimes. The second offense must really be big. You can't just do it small, eh? Okay. It appears, okay, business unity, South Africa, it appears on the memorandum of government wishes to bring compliance with the normal standard respect to listed. However, it should not, it should be noted the wording refers only to normal standards being developed rather than developed or adopted. What did we put developed? Huh? Yeah, you see developed, actually they're right. It shouldn't be developed. Because a normal standard which has been developed may not have been adopted, so how will you hold people account to it? So it must be adopted, okay? You actually also say you prefer adopted. Okay. Business unity. The Act does not clarify under what circumstances the proposed standards would become mandatory. Well, that will depend on each Norman standard. I mean, some of them will be, you will not use a pipe wider than 10 meters, and the others would be, you will use plastic, you will not use titanium. You know. So that's a, it will depend on each of the norms and standards, so I don't think that we have to worry about. Western Cape government, waste management listed activities have been expressly included, thus there is no longer the need to rely on the legal interpretation of section 5 of NEMWA. Hey, I still can't put this NEMWA and BA and LA and QUA and HA. However, we know that NEMAKA has not been similarly included. This will prevent someone who committed an offense in terms of NEMAKA from applying for 24G recreation. As an application for NEMAKA listed is preceded by an EIA, the feeling was that the section process would be followed in respect of EIA convention making section 24G applicable to NEMAKA. The capacity at local authority level to issue 24G fines at this stage is also questioned. Does NEMAKA apply to local government? Well, that applies to this. So you'll go and see if it's applicable here. Check if applicable. Western Cape province. In section 4G, it's also applicable to all semis. Then in 24F, should be amended to do this. 24F1 and 2 should be amended to not only refer to the listed activities, with a proposed amendment to the definition of list activities proposed above, as well as proposed amendments to the wording of 24.2D, section 24F1B, 24F1 be, commence and continue, does not need to be amended. But 1A should be amended to read commence with a listed. The problem refers to specified activity, not specify specific activity. This is the word consistently used in NEMA. Okay, so I'm sure that's acceptable. Section 34G is only applicable to the commencement of activities in contravention and activities to which, for which a waste management license is required in terms of NEMWA. It's not applicable to other SEMAs. I'm not qualified to know if the answer is correct. Has anyone got something to the contrary? Okay. The proposed 24G states that the person commences or continues in the situation protecting human life, property, or environment. It should be considered whether a similar exclusion for criminal liability to be included in 24A when 26 or 30 directive is issued. What's your response to that? They're suggesting the same thing should be applied to 28A as you're providing here in 24, what's it, F.
Chairperson, this is an argument that we haven't really considered and debated fully in the department, and it is something that it has huge implications. So we feel that.
Let's go to the review.
Review, yeah.
Okay, review to consider, add to resolution. That's fair enough. Something with huge implication, which is not invisible, we're referring it to that process. It should be possible to direct someone who wants responsibility proceed in terms of 28 to take measures to avoid significant harm that is a duty of care in terms of 28 to take those measures without it resulting in a further offense being committed. In other words, it should be possible to direct someone to commence with this 28. Oh, this is the one we raised this morning. And we've already agreed you guys are going to look at these three situations and see if we shouldn't make it applicable to 24F and to 30. And then if there's something residual you want to protect, you will then tell us what the wording of that is. People happy with that? Already accepted. And being considered. Okay. It must be determined whether a section compliance notice can be issued for non-compliance with the normal standard. This will have implications for whether or not there are any administrative enforcement mechanisms available to enforce compliance. What's your response to this? I see you've got no response here. Right at the bottom of page 35, the last clause.
Other the questions that you require in terms of making a normal
what you must go and look at is whether clauses that deal with norms and standards fall under the words provision of the law. If it does, then clearly norms and standards will be included. And so there's nothing to look at. So it looks to me as if that should be fine. Erasmus' attorney, the man from, where is it, Prince Albert? I didn't even know, it's a desert there. I didn't know they've got environmental reports and things there. The inclusion of a reference to norms and standards is sensible. It is cause of concern that no amendment to 24 has been proposed. Refers to an emergency as to protect life, blah, 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 blah. While the proposed section to 24G contains no reference to property, well, we said that must be included now. In our submission, the wording of 24G remains extremely problematic. As the section now stands, any actions intended to protect human life, property, or environment is considered to be an emergency irrespective of the cause or scale of the emergency or the consequences. The sense of the wording in our submission plays environment as necessary. Well, we've now at least reworded the defense. So although we haven't specified the specifics there, we said, well, you can't rely on the defense if you've caused it or it's not proportional. So at least we've done that. So we have complied with that in a maybe a slightly different way. Oh, no, he also suggests that. Okay, so that's fine. Where you've deliberately caused it yourself, he suggests that. By the penal provisions, we've done that. The need for consistency with regard to penalties throughout NEMA. Well, we said we're moving towards consistency, so that's fine. While a fine of 5 million may seem immense to mere mortals, it is insignificant in relation to many proposed large-scale activities. This is why I said 2020. Now, me and Prince Albert, we fit together, man. Here, we tough on crime. In the circumstances proposed that in addition to ensuring consistency throughout NEMA, an approach similar to that contained in the Companies Act be adopted, namely that the maximum fine be stated as a proportion of the turnover of offending corporate parties. Unfortunately, you can't do that for a crime, so it's a problem. But it's a nice idea, sliding scale in terms of your turnover. Okay, so I think we've dealt with all those. You know, one thing I want you to look at, this may not be the place, but I want you to make a note of it, is I know it sounds obvious, but clearly when I speak to people, it's a big problem. This thing that when a fine has been granted, these people that do these things almost negotiate with the competent authority and say, okay, I'll pay a fine, but you don't criminally prosecute me, and that becomes a norm. I want a clause somewhere where it's applicable to administrative fines, where we go and look for other clauses, speak to justice, and we must put in something that the paying of a fine in no way whatsoever can be used or can apply to not actually going ahead with a criminal sanction. Yes, ma'am.
We have actually suggested it in our urgent amendment, in that urgent amendment on page 4. We have
urgent amendment, you mean at the back one. Okay, all right, there we are, page 4. Yep.
On page 4 and it's 7. I've numbered them, it's 7. And the submission of the application in terms of subsection 1 shall in no way derogate from the authority of the relevant authority to initiate and conduct a criminal investigation and prosecution in appropriate circumstances. Maybe we are not too specific on the fine.
No, but that's a good start. We can work on that because what it says shall in no way derogate from. So at least this says that you should not. You know, I think what we should be looking at is actually to be stronger here. To say that you know that one should continue with the prosecution, but I know that that's could be a bit problematic if one is too too strongly in the words. But this is a good example of what we can work with at least. Okay, so we. we'll come back to this when we get there. Thank you, ma'am. That's excellent. Yeah, maar die mensen gewerkt, die mensen environment. I hope it's not got nothing to do with your DG telling me that you guys, they're busy looking at bonuses. I hope it's got nothing to do with this hard work of yours in the last few days. And suddenly you give this stuff to them and say, I need a bonus. Look how hard we worked in the last. This is the first time in years you guys have had to work. So we're still busy with section 8. No, 7, eh? We're still busy with 7. Can't be. Are we at 8 now? Oh, at the bottom. Okay. Alright, so we finished with 7. Actually, 7 is the shortest amendment in this bill, and it has the longest amount of comments. Why? Because it deals with criminal offenses, so people comment the most about it. Okay, section 8. Section 8. Maybe we shouldn't start with this section because this is a very important section. There's a lot of pages looking at it. We're not going to finish in half an hour. So maybe we should start. I think we've done well up to clause 7. All right. So what I want to reiterate again is that obviously what we've discussed today is not any position of anyone or binding and so on. But what we have asked the department is to do certain work now. The one thing is up to clause 7, you guys can now go and start looking at proposed amendments. But at the top of the document, write confidential, not mandated, not decided yet. Work in progress. Go write all that stuff at the top of the document so that no one says there's amendments that have been agreed to. And then start working on some of this where you can. Some of it, of course, we're not looking at amendments yet. For example, the whole section... the one that we've discussed along section 5. There's a whole lot of work in the search that has to go and be done there. And then the waste stuff, there's a whole lot of work to go and have to be done there to come and see whether by drawing in pieces of an act into this, whether it all reads correctly. You've got to have to go and do that work. If there are further amendments that come out of that, you can of course deal with that. I think a lot of the other stuff you've given us good answers. Under this section 5 there's a whole lot of work. I think we must get a legal opinion unless the department agrees with the way we've outlined how the law looks now and how that, unless you disagree with that and you think you don't need an opinion, otherwise I think we must get an opinion that deals with those aspects. Otherwise we're going to keep calling talking about apples and pears and so on. Okay. So I think those things have been done. All the other issues are fine. And then those are the main things. You can also start drafting that resolution. It's always good to have it already because otherwise one forgets about these things, even if it's half drafted. So start drafting the resolution as well, and the specific issues we're referring to the review process. State them so that one can understand them if they're written there. Are those all the main things we've looked at? Everyone happy with that? Okay, so we'll adjourn now for the rest of the week because our program has been thrown out a bit. I hope you've all seen the new program that Chileka has given. This was the changes that have been made. Have a look at that. If you want to comment on it on next time we meet, you'll be happy to do so. That means that the next time we meet, as things stand now, may change in the meantime, but as things stand now, next Tuesday morning, next Wednesday morning, we'll start with the Department of Water on the National Water Resource Strategy. Now, I must tell members, you've been given a document, but that document is only a summary of the document. I've asked the department, but where's the document? And I've been told that no, it's not really available yet. And I said, but that's wrong. How can Cabinet approve the document? Surely they didn't approve the summary, they approved the document. So, I'm going to try and select us try. This is now the final one. This is still the summary that we gave you, okay? But we tried to find the original document, the whole report, so that we can look at
Yeah, because people can study these things properly. This is just a summary of them. So you will hopefully get before next Tuesday the thick one, okay? Then there's also a document that Ms. Starwood found. It's some document on the water sector. One of the NGOs has written a document on the water sector. I think it was given to you yesterday. Keep it also with this stuff. It may help you identify issues in this. Then I think that Chileka must also get us the first document, the NWRS-1, so that you can compare and see what's changed. So I'm going to ask her to also get that for you. Okay. So all those things, hopefully there'll be a stack of documents for next week, 2 days of looking at this. Maybe you can then just read through them quickly and then you'll be up to scratch. And then the week after, then we'll continue with you guys, eh? The 18th and the 9th, the last week of Parliament, the Tuesday morning and the Wednesday morning, we'll continue with exactly what we're doing now, okay? I don't expect the work that you're doing now, I don't expect it to be done by then, but please start with this work, okay? Because I don't think we'll finish all these other clauses and get back to that work yet. So whatever you can do, do it. So if we start, if we finish, then we'll have to restart the process starting at Section 1 again, okay? That's how we keep doing it. We'll come back to the bill, start with Section 1, the work that you've done, see what you've done, until we've got a document where we've got amendments we can take to our parties, okay? So that's then. The recess matter, Chileka still trying, Lesotho, they were quite excited yesterday, but have we finalized that thing? Are we still not? What are we waiting for? No, well, look, I'm just saying that we look for the date either week of the recess. The problem is I've been invited in the first week to another thing that I'm attending in arts and culture. But if they want to, if they can only have it in the first week, then Mark or someone can lead the delegation to go and look at the mountain. If I can't make it. But if they can do it in the second week, then that's fine, then I can go as well. Okay? So in the recess, any one of them, just check with them and then please do the application. Is that everything for now? I think so. Sorry, let me say this again. I fight with the department very infrequently, only when it's necessary. But I want to say to you, I really haven't in a long time seen such good work has been done as you've done here. The summary of these things, you've gone out of your way to put each submission in front of us properly. You give your responses to it, even some of them where you haven't got full responses. And all the other work you've done, I really want to say to you guys, you've done really well as a delegate. And I'll speak to the DG and tell the DG. I've been highly impressed by the work that you've done over the short period, all of you. So thank you very much. That does not mean that I think that the bonuses are a good idea for the budget. But it does mean you've done good work. And don't put it on the CV for bonuses when you say that the chair said we did good work, okay? This doesn't account for bonuses. Only accounts for your good work. Okay. Members of the committee, I think we had, although we've had a disrupted week, I think we still did some good work. Have a nice break or two, and then the next 2 weeks we'll really work hard to try and push for the next period. Okay. The last term is really tough. We're working 2-3 topics a day because we had to push everything down the last term. So we're trying where we've got time here to ease up a bit, okay? Anyone want to add something, say something? Okay, then be careful when you go home, and good luck. We'll see you next Tuesday.